The Breakdown with Bethany is a mom.com podcast.
This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
Oh, I see. Let's see if that works. There. Oh. Whew. I only do this 700 hours a day. I'm so sorry. Awesome. Oh, well. Thank you. Oh, I'm so sorry. You get the gist. This is my morning coffee. Totally. Totally. Okay. So I think I actually wanted to call this book Raising Good Parents because I didn't. Obviously, I called it The Five Principles of Parenting, but really we're all, I'm in it to like seeking support to figure out like how best to help our children thrive. And so much of it is really just helping ourselves thrive in front of our children. And not in that, like, I'm going to a spa. I mean, like, really learning about the things that we wish we had a little more capacity for before we had kids. But now we have the motivation to just kind of do better for ourselves and then do better for our kids. Totally. Well, I feel like, and let me say, I have some colleagues that have written magnificent books. So there's beautiful work out there. There's also stuff that's just too rigid and too prescriptive and too minutia oriented. And like it gets us, we kind of lose our way and we lose the plot. And it's not fair to parents. So what I'm saying is, we want, and I get it, like we want an exact paint by numbers way to make sure that our kids are healthy and thriving. The problem is when we hear from people who give that, it's more to soothe ourselves, like, okay, this'll work, but it's less actually beneficial to the kids or the parents, because what happens is when you inevitably burn out from being so, like scripted and exact, you give up and you feel like such a crappy parent. And that's so, it's like this vicious cycle. And I think it's our field has gone too far in the sharing of all of this. And so I wanted to distill it down to really like, what are the core principles that actually move the needle in the science that we have control over? You can't control your socioeconomic status. You can't control your ethnicity. You can't control racial injustice. You can't control, if there's somebody at work who's not hiring you because you don't have good enough paid leave or whatever it is. Like there's stuff that has nothing to do with you, but there's things that we can control. I wanted to capture those and make sure that everyone knows deeply inside of themselves that these are not that many things that we know from robust science really make a difference. And they're like doable. It just feels so overwhelming sometimes. And if you can break it down to these five, all of a sudden you're like, I'm actually like, I can do this. And you don't have to do it all the time. There's just some relief in that. And I wanted parents to have relief because I work with parents day in and day out. And I work with physicians who work with parents. So those are the two hats that I wear. And I will tell you, as you know, the worries are so heavy about things that are never going to matter in the long term for that child and are definitely going to matter to the short-term well-being of that parent. And so we lose ourselves in this like beautiful, desperate quest to get it right all the time. Anyway, so that's it. I just wanted to make it easier. Right. I just think it makes sense. Like there was an era where, I'm thinking of the Mad Men scene where the little girl comes in with the dry cleaning bag over her head because she's playing that way. And like there was a lot of not so benign neglect. And there wasn't a lot of attention to what's going on inside and our feelings and our foundations. And then there was so much emphasis on making confident kids and telling kids how incredible they are, no matter what. And just like how they're Picasso when they do anything with art. And I think then we had like a backlash on that because you had a bunch of kids who were like, wait a minute, I'm not the center of the world. I'm not the most important. I'm not the most talented. I'm not going to get the raise when I get out of college and just want to be president of the company. And that was so then there was like, let's get into who these kids are and really understand them. And then I think we got so far into being afraid of our kids having complicated, challenging feelings that we didn't really attend to, that now it's like 30 minutes to just talk about teeth brushing. And that is just not serving anyone. And I get it. Like, we need to move the pendulum a lot. And I would say if, like, my book does not, it really is so boring in that. That's not good marketing, but it's so much in the middle of the chaos of not having support and the rigidity of like way too much focus on exactly the support. And if I thought it helped families to have that much micromanagement, I'm in. But over the years, I've learned like that actually really ends up getting us so stuck. And I remember in one of my first groups, I was helping this group of moms with their toddlers help with bedtime routines. And I said it can be helpful to have a visual chart. And like with just sort of like what the few things are that need to get done in the night. And then they can go back to it and it's always consistent. And that is a good idea. But I wasn't specific. And one of the moms came back the next week with a 16-step magnificent, like the prettiest chart in the world. And she's so upset because she said her kids were not following anything. And I was like, oh, I should have, right. What I offered was actually burdensome to everybody because I wasn't saying like the gist is predictability and these consistent routines are helpful. Sometimes if you pick four and you just do them every night, it can be helpful, but not like this beauty. It does not have to be this artistic, magical experience. And then I had another client in one of my groups not that long ago who was, but she's been in my group for years and years. So this was her third kid. And she came to group. She used to always knit during group. And she came to group with gloves on, you know, for carpal tunnel or something like that. And I said, what is going on with your wrists? And she was knitting and she said, I have knitting hands, which I had never heard of. And it was because she wanted to make sure everything for her third child was exactly the same as her first child. So in the with for the first child, knitting everything was so fun and it was like peaceful and cool. And then the second child, it was sort of obligatory, but she could do it. But by the third child, she didn't feel like it would this would be fair or okay if she didn't hand knit everything perfectly. And she injured herself. And I was just like, if that's not emblematic of what is going on for the just the tension of moms just trying to get it so right that they injure themselves. I know. I know. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing that, like, it doesn't matter how kids, I mean, of course it matters how kids feel, but you don't want to pick a feeling like my outcome is that I want my child to always feel happy because that's ridiculous. Nobody could. Wouldn't that be so nice? Or would that? I don't know. But resilience, like being able to bounce back in the face of setbacks, adversity, trauma, significant sources of stress, like that's what we're going for. And then there's another softer way of saying it, which is the quote from Maya Angelou. Now I can't remember it. It's like, you can tell a lot about a person by these three things. And I think it's like a rainy day, lost luggage, and tangled Christmas tree lights. And it's like, that's also resilience. Just can you? So it's two things. It's like the big R resilience and then a little stuff. And for me, I really wanted to choose the core science of resilience. And so relationship, reflection, regulation, rules, and repair are exactly the pathway to resilience. So that's why I chose them. And then, of course, I put in the book skills that you can help bolster in your kids that are associated with resilience. But we really know that, yes, we are primed for resilience. Humans want to survive. So we just need to know some of the support systems we can put in place to help pull that out. And of course, there are going to be some kids who are more temperamentally inclined to be resilient, but there's so much we can do. And it's not hard. It's like, it's hard because it's hard to wake up in the morning and have energy to do anything all the time. But these are pretty basic principles. Like in some ways, when I wrote it, I was like, are people going to think this is too easy? Like, it's just too easy. This can't be right. But it is. It's just such robust science from 100 years ago till now. Like, we've been getting better and better at studying resilience because, you know, we have neuroscience now to help us. But we learned during World War I and World War II about resilience, and that having one caregiver really made a difference. And now not just a caregiver, but a caregiver with whom you feel safe and seen and supported and all that good stuff.
Yeah.
Out. Yeah. I know. Yeah. So I think there's two parts of this. One is we can, of course, exercise our self-regulation muscles. And that is a huge part of, like, at the end of each chapter, I have a regulation exercise that takes 2 minutes. And when you exercise that muscle every day, you get better at it. And that means that you are more of a responder than a reactor. And also, that doesn't mean that you're not going to go into a stress response when you are, like you said, you felt, quote unquote, I think you said triggered with the medicine situation. And so, like, you have to know that that's going to happen. Reflection is important because you can kind of predict some of the times that it's going to happen. But if you know that more often than not, you can get yourself to self-regulation, then your child can co-regulate. They can borrow your nervous system instead of borrowing a nervous system that's spinning out. So there's a lot of motivation to me for self-regulation. And again, we all are going to blow up. Like, find me somebody, even the most calm person. The stakes are absolutely the highest with our kids. We never will care about anything more. So it's also going to mean that we will get triggered into a stress response more easily. And a stress response is our body's way of saying, I'm so sorry. Let me just turn that off. It's our body's way of saying, a stress response is our body's way of saying, there's an emergency. I need to act to save a life, mine probably, or my child's. A stress response is an internal alarm system. And we go into fight, flight, or freeze typically. And so if you're screaming at your kid, you went into fight, and it makes sense. And so the self-regulation thing is learning the passcode to your alarm system. And so that you can notice the signals that are telling you, oh boy, it's coming. Like, there's a warning. There's always a warning before the alarm goes off. And then you just getting really skilled at noticing the signals and doing the things that stop you from letting the alarm go off. And you're not going to be able to do that all the time. You just can't. But if you can get your body in a state of being able to say, that's an imagined threat, that's a real threat, you'll get better at it. And then the medication thing is like, can I pause and say, is there a threat to human life right now? No. Okay. So I'm not in a rush. Like I can wash my hands, like put my hands under cold water, only because that's one of the things that can signal to your body that there isn't an emergency. Or I can take three deep breaths before I scream. Like it will be intentional if I scream. And that way you don't feel crappy about it. And is that going to happen all the time? No. And when you do scream, the good news is when you're in a good relationship with your child, you'll see your child after school and you'll say, "I'm so sorry about that. I really lost my cool. I love you." And they'll probably be like, "I know." You know? Or they'll forget, you know? So I think that's, and that's a clue too. If your kids are scared of you, that's something to really think about. Like, what's going on that they're afraid of me? If they're not afraid and you yell sometimes, it doesn't matter. Is it ideal that you're yelling? No, but like you're going to, and that's okay. And I don't even think I've ever met anybody, because of course people tell me the things they're more ashamed of than they maybe share with everybody else. And I almost wish I could share with everyone the stats on how much yelling happens in the most loving households. And also, yelling is like, it sounds different depending on your personality. Like, I don't have a loud voice. So for me to yell, it's like, it's cumbersome. It's like, it hurts. And so I get very, like, I scrunch my fists because I'm like, I need everybody to listen to me, but I just don't have a good yell. So it's my version of yelling. And it just is like, I'm out of control. And my kids know. And probably half the time they laugh because I look like a cartoon character, but they know it's because I've lost control. Which, yeah. Well, okay. So I have this 7-step plug and play, and then I have a 3-step. And I actually say, like, I know you're not going to do 7 steps most of the time. So that's just there for like when you're in this mood where you're like, you know what? I want to be really thoughtful with all of my responses because I'm just practicing and I have an easy week. And then the shorthand is I say bad, breathe, assess, decide. And you're just like, this is, I'm just gonna, that's it. That's all you have to do. That is self-regulation. First of all, if you can breathe, if you have time to breathe, you have time to breathe intentionally. And if you can take a breath before anything you do as a parent, you're like upping your game exponentially because it just means, okay, I did this on purpose. That's what a breath is. And anyway, so the second half of the book, basically, even though I don't love the idea of scripts and I don't love the idea of plug and play, I also love parents. And I know that sometimes they're just tired. You know, like we're just like, just can you just give me like some idea? So I did try to think of every scenario that comes my way and on multiple occasions over the years by age. And then respond to it with the information I put in the first half of the book so that parents could just get kind of fluent in responding. And then it translates to any scenario. Thank you so much. And I hope this afternoon goes, it'll just be like a blip, no memory of it even. Thank you. Thank you. Bye.